IRC2. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's a little thing tech show in that fact. If you don't like the cats, you can get up your ass. There ain't no funny duddies that'll link it bad. For the show is good record DLNGS.org. And the IRC channel is a linuxx.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
Welcome to another exciting episode of the Linux Link Tech Show. This is episode 372. Today is Wednesday, October 20th, 2010. Welcome, everybody.
Yay!
Howdy!
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Good evening.
Another exciting week, another exciting guest joining us is Stephen Von Nichols. Stephen, welcome back to the show. It's been a long time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, there's been a lot of excitement over you coming on the show.
Yes, there has.
Yeah. Things must be pretty darn slow then if I'm your excitement, but
no, not at all. You got some pretty big fans out there. From all over the world, especially Australia. It's excited to hear you. So how have things been going?
Things have been going pretty well. As have things in Linux land. Lots of spiffy stuff happening out there, and it's pretty much a good time to be a Linux user. But then, of course, when is it not a good time to be a Linux user, eh?
That is the truth. Now, why do you think there's a lot of good things going on compared to what? I mean,
well, let's see. The big news, actually, is that this is a purely business news kind of thing, so this won't excite too many people, but I think it's a very telling episode, is that the London Stock Exchange is in the middle of transitioning from its old Windows.net system, which those of you with long memories who pay attention to stock market news remember that it crashed and burned about 2 years ago. And at the time, some people, including yours truly, said, you know what, well, this is really pretty dreadful system you have here, and you need to move to something a whole lot better and a whole lot faster, like, say, Linux. And to make a long story short, they're in the final stage of, it actually is in production on some systems now over at the LSE, and November 1st the entire thing goes over. And in the initial runs that they've been doing, which is a small part of the market, they're seeing speeds that are below 200 milliseconds, which sets a new world record for stock market transaction speeds. Pretty much cuts it in half to the old record holder. And they're doing it with Linux. And again, you know, if you're not really into stock market or business, that's not such a big deal, but trust me, if you are in the market, Wall Street, the city in London, wherever, this is a really big deal. This is going to this will make people money, and this is going to get people who you know, if you ever run into anyone who says, you know, Linux is just not that good for serious server work, oh you foolish person, you. The London Stock Exchange is the oldest around. They've been Windows. It failed on them horribly. They've moved now to this Linux system, which appears to be Red Hat-based, though they're not saying exactly what's happening inside the server room. And you don't put any operating system into a situation like that, especially after a massive failure, unless you know darn well this thing is going to produce and really just blast the doors off everything else out there.
It's funny you mention that, Stephen. I was at the Linux End User Summit in Jersey City last week, and they had one of the presenters was a guy from NASDAQ based in New York, and they have their systems completely based on Linux, and has been for a long time. And you know, his whole thing was being able to do, you know, millions of transactions, you know, every few seconds, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing runs like a top.
Yeah, and in these days, it may sound silly, but you need to be able to do that to compete if you're a stock market. And, it's not just the NASDAQ. The Tokyo Exchange is now Linux. New York Stock Exchange, Euronet, which is basically the European fronting side of the New York Stock Exchange, runs Linux now. You know, pretty much all the big boys are doing it now. And another part of that reason why they're going into that is that it's not just enough to be fast. You also have to have damn accurate records of what you've done, or you run into situations where you can have stock manipulations by programs and so on. So you darn well better be able to trace what's happening in close to real time. And Linux can, and the software on top of it can do that too. Pretty impressive stuff, really.
Yeah, the only weak spot I think for Linux has been, it really hasn't really exploded on the desktop. I mean, you talk to Linux people, we've been running it as our desktop system for years now, but it just doesn't seem to have the market share that, people thought it would by now.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's an accounting thing or,
Well, actually, I've written about that recently, some people, I think, sort of misunderstood what I was saying. My particular piece was entitled, "Is the Linux Desktop Dream Dead?" And I answered that question in a sort of odd way. In some ways, I think that if you think of Linux desktop success being like what Windows XP was, yeah, I don't see that happening now. Anyone on this show could give you a song and dance about why Linux is better on the desktop, because it just is. It's faster. It's more secure. It usually is faster. It's certainly a lot more secure. Takes up less resources.
It works.
You get a lot more control over things, et cetera, et cetera. But what's been happening at the same time, though, is that we're moving away from desktops really a lot faster than I think anyone thought we would, certainly faster than Microsoft thinks that we are. And by that I mean a lot of people are now using a smartphone or a tablet as their primary computing interface. A lot of people, too, the actual desktop in front of them doesn't matter so much, and they use a web browser, and Google Docs, which runs on Linux in the background, is now their office suite. They do everything through the web browser. If they need a more sophisticated application, that's why you have software as a service. And again, it doesn't really matter that much what you've got running in front of you there. So I sort of see this from two different angles. One, the fact that we've got all these remote services and web-based services now, which are finally mature enough, and the broadband is omnipresent enough that people are beginning to really get into doing that for most of their work now. And at the same time, you have this shift to a different interface rather than just the desktop that everyone here grew up with. And so between the two of those, I don't say the desktop is going away by any means, but I don't think Linux ever can be as big as XP ever was, because I don't think anything is ever going to be as XP was. I think XP was sort of like the apex of the fat client desktop, and while I certainly am going to be continuing to use a Linux fat client desktop for decades until they cart me out of here, I really expect that in 10, 20 years' time, people aren't going to really be thinking of desktop operating systems the way we do now at all. It's just going to be the interface to their stuff. And their stuff is going to be on a cloud. It's going to be on the web somewhere. They're not really going to care about what that interface is to it, so long as it works for them. And that interface, I strongly suspect, is going to be Linux. If for no other reason than because Microsoft doesn't see this coming, and they're so heavily invested in the fat desktop. I think the fact that if the personnel changes in Microsoft that have been happening in the last just week or so indicates they still really don't get that things are fundamentally changing. Linux can move and adapt to those changes. I'm fond of pointing out that by some measures, we're all Linux desktop users now. I mean, who doesn't use Google? If you use Google, congratulations, you're using Linux on your desktop. The interface itself may be Windows or even, God help us, Internet Explorer, but still, Linux is what's really making stuff happen. That's sort of how I see that. I see us moving sort of into a different world of desktop, where it's more of the personal interface, and where the data is becomes less and less meaningful to most users.
So you see that end user experience really becoming more of a ubiquitous appliance then?
It won't be a ubiquitous appliance because of the different interfaces. Like right now, one reason why you're not seeing a lot of Android tablets yet is that the current version of Android, really the GUI doesn't do that well on a tablet-sized interface. So people are still tinkering with that. What I do see happening is we're going to have all kinds of different interfaces to work with stuff. And while people like us are still going to care what's powering that interface, I think it's going to become increasingly more invisible. It's sort of like the example I always like to cite is the TiVo. We all use DVR. Well, not all of us, but a lot of us use digital video recorders these days. And most of them are running Linux, one type or another, under the hood. But people don't think of it that way. They don't see it that way. Only people who think in terms of embedded operating systems look at that level of complexity. So we're going to have all these different devices, all of which are going to have Linux somewhere in the background, whether it's all the way back to the servers or in the cloud or on the device actually in your hand or on your desk. I don't know. I just know that Linux is going to be there, and I suspect the interfaces are going to be actually fairly varied depending on what the actual device is. So, for example, I think you're going to continue to see an Android-style interface on smartphones. On a netbook, though, if you haven't seen the Ubuntu Unity interface yet, you should take a look at it because it really does a very good job of making the most of the limited real estate you've got on a netbook interface. So I see the interface sort of changing and adapting to what devices you have at hand. And then, of course, there's always my pet theory, which is that in a few years, our interface is going to be built into our glasses. Hey, if we can wear dorky 3D glasses now, which are not as dorky as the 3D glasses of the 50s, why not have glasses that will have, using either Bluetooth or gigabit Ethernet, gigabit Wi-Fi, and have the device on your belt or what have you, and the only thing you actually might carry around with you is either a tablet or a portable keyboard, and everything that you type in gets wirelessly sent to the device on your belt, which then sends the whatever the display is to your glasses. Again, that's something that you could do with Linux. Windows, not so much. Whole different world.
So what you're saying is you think like the real like out there future is probably like an augmented reality kind of computing device?
I could see augmented reality doing that, yeah, quite easily. I've done some research on augmented reality for the IEEE, And we're just scratching the surface of what's possible out there now. I think in five years it'll be quite possible that you could go walking around with your pair of glasses on, and again a device on your belt, and you look around, and if you want to, information about your environment will flood around you. You'll get you look at the coffee shop, if there's a sale there, it will pop up. There'll probably be spam by that time. Well, 7 to 10 years will doubtlessly have spam on that too, so you have to have some sort of way of blocking out the information that you don't want to have. I can certainly see that happening. In fact, I'm sure that it will happen. And again, because Linux is just so darn flexible, I really, certainly Linux or something, or a close relative of Linux is what I see powering those devices. Are you with me, guys?
No,
we're just digesting it.
Yeah, I know. I've been babbling a lot here.
No, that's a good thing. That is a good thing.
It is.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you, Stephen, is you've been in the business of tech journalism for a very long time.
Yep.
And
entirely too long.
What made you gravitate towards Linux? And before gravitating towards Linux, what had been like your focus, and what made you gravitate towards Linux from that?
Well, actually, my very first operating system was IBM MVS and TSO and CICS and a bunch of other acronyms that I won't bore you with. So I actually come from the mainframe world. Yeah. My first language was IBM 360 JCL. Trust me, this is not the language you want to start with.
I was an operator before I became a system administrator, and we ran, up until we got rid of our mainframe, we ran DOS VSC. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. you poor devil.
Yep. I was the operator watching the console with the fax and a lot of old system software. Yay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, with that as my introduction, somewhere along the line, I became sort of a operating system guru, and whatever the operating system of the day was, you just were pro Steven at it. He can do it. He can figure it out. And so I got exposed to a lot of stuff early on, including the mainframes. And from there, I also ran into top 20 on deck minis and a lot of other stuff. And along the way, I ran into, I used System 7 Unix, but I actually think my first was System 5 Release 2 Unix on AT&T FreeB2s or FreeB1s. I don't know. It was a long time ago. And let me tell you, after having enjoyed the pleasures of mainframe operating systems and the horrors of deck operating systems, for all that you can always get me to say something obnoxious about a Windows operating system, for perversity, I still think early Mark's deck VAX VMS takes the cake. In any case, though, I ran into open systems back before we had open source, and I thought, you know, this just makes so much more sense. You could get to the source code then. I always like to remind people that, well, yes, free software and open source are relatively newer ideas. Back before we cared about intellectual property issues and so on, there was a time when you could just get the Unix source code. Anybody could. Certainly System 7, and that was just really nice being able to get to the power. And I was actually a Minix user before Linux came along, and I liked Minix, and I liked what Andrew Tannenbaum had to say about operating systems. Even now, if you want a basic introduction, you can't go too far wrong by getting any of Andrew Tannenbaum's books on operating systems. It's really the place to start, and then you can get to the more complicated issues. So anyway, when Linux finally came along, and I have to say I was not a very early Linux person. I was in by the end of its first year, but I wasn't like there on Usenet in the first few months. I was aware of what Linux was doing probably around 0.2 or 0.3, but I didn't actually try it until later on, and I just liked it. Again, it works. It makes sense. If you knew what you were doing with Unix or the BSDs or SunOS, whatever, pick your Unix poison of the day, you were able to pick up Linux without much fuss or muss. And, you know, and over time, to me, Linux has picked up all the virtues of all the various other Unix distributions that were out there. It didn't, probably most of this audience won't remember, but there was a time when there were enormous Unix fights between one camp and another, and the result was that you had all these different Unixes out there, and nothing but nothing that was meant to run on one Unix would run on somebody else's Unix, which just really, the only person that really helped was Microsoft and Windows. And then Linux came along with its much more open way of doing things, and hey, you had a Unix-like operating system that pretty much anyone could write to, and your code would work no matter whether the system, the distribution of choice was from Slackware or from Caldera or Red Hat. It would just run, and you didn't, when I say it would just run, I mean that you didn't have to use make or to build it. You could actually get binaries and stuff like that. You didn't have to be at least a baby programmer to get stuff to work. And that was just such a refreshing difference. And so there you go. There's in short is how I got interested in Linux and why I'm still there today, because it's all those virtues of it's open, it's portable, are still there today.
So you have all these years of experience. You've been in the field for a long time. You go write your opinion, or you write mm-hmm. about something, and invariably you just have a constant stream, a regular contingent of negativity in the comments that you receive. I mean, all tech journalists have that. Is that hard to deal with, or have you, you know, pretty much come to expect it, and it rolls off of you?
Yeah, I'm pretty much expect it anymore. I mean, some of it too is just not only is it FUD, but on the computer world blog, I mean, there was this one guy who, he started just to sort of copy and paste. So he'd rant about one thing, and then a couple of months later, we noticed, wait, I've seen that. I'm sure I've seen that before. I mean, most of these rants sound the same anyway, but this was like, what is this? And I looked back, and he had actually had copied and pasted, complete with the typos. So, you know, what he or she thinks they're getting out of that, I have no idea. Because, you know, it annoys me sometimes, but it certainly doesn't bother me. But, I mean, bad enough that you have such a little bit of a life that all you can do is whine at me about my particular favorites are the ones who, for a while I had somebody who almost every other blog I would do would scream at me about the Linux desktop. Now, mind you, I could be writing about, say, VMware business practices, and the first thing would be some sort of scream about how the Linux desktop wasn't going to go anywhere. And that, you know, I just feel sort of more sorry for them than anything else. Because this isn't really so much a personal attack as just somebody who's, you know, they clearly, they have either a problem or, I don't know, Microsoft isn't paying them enough. Because the quality of their criticism just, I don't see how anyone could read some of this stuff and think, oh, well, gosh, he's right. That Von Nichols guy really doesn't know what he's talking about. Goodness knows, some days I don't know what I'm talking about, but, you know, if you're going to point it out, then, you know, point it out in a way that actually makes sense and can be defended.
Yeah, it's, it can be humorous to read a lot of those comments.
Yeah.
And do you find it's the same, like, people over and over again?
It seems to be. I know I have some fans. At the same time, I have also, I guess you would call them anti-fans, people who are just, will dislike whatever I do and will let me know about it no matter what I'm writing about. Which, again, sort of strikes me sort of odd. It's not like, you know, if you really hate my work that much, why are you there reading it again, eh? You know, I mean, what's the point? If you really don't like it, no one's forcing you to read this stuff. I mean, you have to look for me. It's not like I'm, you know, plastered over the top of Google every Google News every time you turn on Google News. I don't quite understand it, but I do know that the anti-fans are out there, and they're actually regular readers, too. I just wish they'd,
find... Wish they'd read somebody else?
Well, not so much that, but, you know, seriously, if you really dislike what I'm saying so much, why are you bothering? You know, find someone you do like. You know,
The psychology of trolling, I guess, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, it's not like you even react that much to trolls, so why do this? I mean, if you really want, if you want some pro-Microsoft stuff, rather than, go read, Ed Bott or something. I mean, Ed, knows what he's talking about, even though he is pro-Microsoft and pro-Windows, and, you know, there you go. There's somebody that you could agree with, and you could say, yeah, that's how it is. You know, more power to you. Say hi to him. For me while you're there.
Steven,
so what
your take on...
Go ahead.
Please. Go ahead, Pat.
I was going to ask Steven what his take was on the Oracle takeover of Sun and the road they seem to be going down. You know, they got the lawsuit with the Java against Google. They're basically, we've got the forking of OpenOffice. And basically, OpenOffice, they're pushing non-Oracle people off their community board.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think, and when I say this, this is not just my opinion, but I know a lot of people at Sun, and I think I can safely say, I know pretty much everyone who was a mover and shaker in Sun open source circles, down pretty low in the hierarchy. And most of those people, as I'm sure anyone who pays attention to this knows, most of the Sun open source people are history. They either jumped very occasionally, they were pushed, most of them jumped out because they saw what was coming. And what was coming is that Oracle is an open source supporter, but only so long as that open source support affects Oracle's bottom line. So Oracle, for example, has no trouble and actually are quite helpful to Linux because they use Linux. They use Linux internally. They actually do use Linux on their desktops in Oracle land. And they actually put a lot of development dollars into Linux. But say a project is not central to them, say like OpenSolaris, then they're not going to have really a thing to do with it. They're going to let it die. And that's happening to a lot of programs over there now. A lot of the minor open source, and some of the major ones, like OpenSolaris, are essentially history. I don't think Oracle is ever going to quite come out and say that X or Y is history until after they're either dead or they've, in the case of OpenSolaris, it's slid away entirely. And so they're just, you know, again, they're good for open source only in so much as open source is good for Oracle. And so a lot of those projects that Sun started, I see withering on the vine and dying. You have projects, you know, we mentioned OpenOffice. Now, the OpenOffice fork really didn't happen so much because of there was any resentment outside of the Oracle about OpenOffice being owned by Oracle now. The problem that people had was the same problem people had had for a long time with OpenOffice, which was it was a good, solid piece of software, which hadn't gone anywhere for the last few years. Getting even simple bug fixes, even whether the company was Sun or Oracle in charge of it, was just taking forever. And people were getting really tired of it, and they wanted to, like, do more with it. And so this was sort of an effort to get things moving. The LibreOffice movement, the Document Foundation movement, was to get things moving again with OpenOffice. And Oracle was invited to, you know, to join in on this effort, sort of to shake things up and renovate it. And Oracle said no, they were not interested. And then they said, also, we're not just not interested, but you have a choice. You can either work with us in OpenOffice and quit LibreOffice, or you can keep working on LibreOffice and get the heck out of our OpenOffice community. And I think that's kind of dumb of Oracle, because the people who really wanted to code and make things and to advance OpenOffice were the LibreOffice people. I said something to the effect of they were cutting their nose off to spite their face, but, you know, I've been thinking about that a little more, and I'm no longer quite sure that's the case, because I'm now beginning to wonder, well, really, though, of what great strategic value was OpenOffice to Oracle? Again, I mean, going down to the bottom line, Oracle was interested, as I see it, into developing one gigantic software stack. But that software stack doesn't go into Office Suite. It doesn't go into the end user desktop. They'd rather the database and accounting and SAP style applications, all that stuff, be Oracle, and the complete development stack using Java be Oracle. But an actual end user application, even one as important as OpenOffice, I'm not sure they actually see it of any strategic, any real strategic value. So I sort of wonder if whether or not sort of booting the LibreOffice people out was just them just acting sort of out of petty spite rather than anything else, and because they were daring to want some control over this process. And Oracle, well, Larry Ellison in particular, really, really does not like anyone else having any control over any say over anything that he considers his own. And so if people weren't willing to let OpenOffice meander as Larry wanted it to meander and perhaps become more irrelevant in time, then you know, shove them out the door, and don't let the door hit them on the rump as they exit stage left. End result, I think LibreOffice is going to become the office suite in the open source community. In fact, I think that's a very safe prediction. I don't see how it could possibly come out any other way, really, at this point.
Do you think that the fork to LibreOffice and now, as we see the FOSS community gravitating towards that, and at the same time, we're seeing a lot of negative publicity or criticism about OpenOffice, particularly from Microsoft with that recent video. I think that this kind of split from a well-known brand name, OpenOffice, to something called LibreOffice, is going to muddy the waters as to exactly what this is, and potentially work against the brand's name. And
you know, in most situations, I would worry about that, because brands are very important things. But you know, the OpenOffice brand had actually been declining in value for quite some time now. Again, because they just really haven't done that much with it for the last few years. And so, OpenOffice has sort of just become this stodgy program that everybody included in their distribution kind of by default, and it's been popular with some people to download. And I'm not, you know, I really don't know how much brand value it had left. The Microsoft attack on it probably gave it more of a boost than anything else had in quite some time. But I don't know. You know, I mean, I can't remember ever hearing a user saying, oh, I want to go with this or that because OpenOffice is in it. It just doesn't happen that way. It's just, I mean, I hear people get excited about, you know, web browsers, certainly people can get excited about. People can get excited about editors. People can get excited by editors, like, I mean, programming editors. They can get excited about voice over internet protocol programs. But Office Suites, not so much. Not so much. There was a time, of course, when it was a big deal. But I think those days have long gone, and these days people either, you know, they buy Microsoft Office almost out of reflex if they're on Windows, or if they're a bit more clever, or frankly, just, you know, they want a value, they'll just get OpenOffice or now LibreOffice for free. And I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure it's going to make a whole lot of difference to those folks. I think that they'll hear that LibreOffice is the new coming Office suite, and it's also free. And again, the ones who are, you know, value conscious and want a good deal, because let's face it, is there really anything significant that you can do in Office 2010 that you can't do in OpenOffice? I can't really think of a whole lot, to be honest with you. Certainly not the kind of things that 99% of people who use Office Suites think of doing. You know, bottom line is, I think LibreOffice is actually going to be okay, and I imagine it's going to continue to gain customers at a slow, steady pace. Well, actually, it'll go up very quickly as OpenOffice begins to decline, but then it'll get to about where OpenOffice is now, and then go back to, you know, slowly but surely gathering up customers.
What do you think of Microsoft's video that they put out against OpenOffice?
I don't know. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. It didn't really impress me. It struck me, you know, Microsoft, you know, setting aside that I really don't care for the company and so on, just looking at all their ad campaigns and marketing recently for everything, whether it's mobile phones or this video, I just, you know, it does, I don't find it engaging. I find it hard to imagine that it's really going to convince anyone of anything. I was really underwhelmed by it. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Do you think any of those, I mean, obviously, those quotes were, I would suspect there is some truth that
those people did say those things. But is that an overwhelming, I mean, do you hear that a lot in the business world as complaints about open office?
No. Actually, you know what those quotes were? I didn't do the research. I think it might have been, his name is Paul, I think, another journalist. I'm not sure who did. Someone did the actually research and the where did these quotes came from. And these quotes came from other Microsoft-sponsored studies over the last couple of years. So what do you expect to come out of a Microsoft study? People are going to tell them, you know, the only thing that the public is going to hear are those quotes that Microsoft wants people to hear. So it's not like they even did any original or new research or on this. This was just more of the same old, same old. They just, you know, happened to pull it all together. I suppose it might have been to set people up not so much to buy Office 2010, but maybe to try to talk them into getting the new version of Office Online, which is Office 365, I think it is. They announced it 2 days ago.
Yes.
Essentially, if you're a business, you pay, $5 a month per customer, and you can use Office Online. Hooray. Pay rent to Microsoft for the rest of your life. I don't think so. But perhaps someone had a thought that if we just gather up all this stuff that we've had before and throw it into something, maybe this will get people more receptive to our new Office product line. If that was their logic, it struck me as really not that well done, but there really hasn't been any other Office news has come out anywhere close to this, so that's the only thing that I can, the only business reason I can think of why in the world they would want to do this now. It's certainly go ahead.
To be honest, I'm blessed with not having to use Microsoft products or anything other than Linux, both at work and at home, which is was great. So I'm not as familiar with the new stuff that comes out in the Microsoft world. So I'm not too up on Office 365. Is that still locked to the Microsoft operating system, or can that be used like in a like in Firefox or Chrome? Can that be used in there, and then could it be used on a different platform if it's web cloud based, or is it still locked to Microsoft and Internet Explorer?
It is, I believe, still locked to Microsoft Internet Explorer. Let me check now, because I honestly have not done anything with it at this point. And
probably some ActiveX based stuff or something like that.
I would think so.
I'm wondering if that's going to be usable on...
It's in beta now. System requirements. Hello. It will run on Macs as well. And it does need... It says it'll run under... It says it will run under Firefox and Safari. We'll see.
So if it runs on Mac, will it run on Linux?
Nope, they do not say a word about Linux. Looking at the requirements right now. So I would guess that this has some ActiveX components. But again, I do not know. I should grab the beta and find out. I wonder what it would do under Wine. Probably could, at a guess... I'd bet you could probably get it to run under Wine if you really wanted to. It certainly is not like a Google Docs, though, where all you need is basically any modern browser, and it doesn't matter what operating system you're on. Any operating system, any modern browser, you can run Google Docs. This Microsoft product is clearly, much pickier about what it will and what it won't run on.
I wonder what that's going to mean for cross-application compatibility.
In terms of?
Documents, the format of the documents, whether Office 365 Online is going to make it more difficult to then take those documents created in there and open it up in, say, LibreOffice or even Google Docs.
Well, I'm sure that the default format is OpenXML. That I have no doubt whatsoever. Again, what other choices it will have when it finally goes full production, I don't know. On the other hand, though, let's keep in mind that one of the other changes that's going to happen to LibreOffice is Novell is going to put in their open source OpenXML readers into LibreOffice. They actually have already been out. They've been out there now for about 2 years. You always got them with Novell Office. If you wanted to go and find them, you could always go and put them on any copy of OpenOffice. It was one of the reasons why Novell joined on this is they had this actually pretty handy feature because I'm sure all of us have had the experience of somebody sending us a docx file and not being able to do a darn thing with it. And, well, the interoperability, translation of OpenXML files to a open document format is not perfect with complicated documents, particularly Excel spreadsheets into Calc spreadsheets is a little troublesome at time. If you're just talking about simple spreadsheets, simple documents, the kind of things that most people work with most of the time, it actually works pretty darn well. I do it all the time with both the SUSE version, Novell SUSE version of OpenOffice, and I've also gone ahead with OpenOffice and brought over this Novell stuff. And anyways, as I was saying, one of the reasons why Novell joined in this movement is they've been saying all along, hi there, we have this open XML translator. We really would like to put it into the main tree or, you know, at least make it an option so that people can just download it if they want it and ta-da, it'll work. But First Sun wouldn't do anything with it, and then Oracle made it clear they weren't doing anything with it as well. So their meeks of Novell and the rest of the crew joined together and said, you know what, we could do a whole lot, get things in here and fixed to new features a whole lot faster if we just started doing our own thing with OpenOffice, which of course is what they did. Anyway, so bottom line is OpenOffice, you probably will have a little trouble. You may actually have a lot of trouble, but LibreOffice should be able to work with anything that Office 365 produces, unless of course Microsoft decides to play games again to revise the format, so once more you have to use, oh, let's call it Office 2013 to read their documents.
So you think if Office 365 takes off, there is a future for desktop Office product?
I don't think Office 365 will take off. I think that the chart, I don't see, listen, if people now who I know are interested in doing an online office, they use Google Docs. It's really pretty darn simple. Some of them may use Zoho for some other stuff, but I talk to a lot of people, not just people who are Linux users, but a lot of Windows people as well. And I can't remember the last time I met anyone who used Office Live or Office Essentials. I forget what they were calling it before, the earlier versions of this. And, I mean, they're just not out there. I do think Microsoft Office Suite is in trouble. I think it's in trouble deep, and I think Microsoft knows it, because it is pretty darn expensive to get. And again, you know, pretty much anything you can do in Microsoft Office, you can do in OpenOffice. There's not a whole lot to choose between them. If you were just looking, if you were starting a new business and you had to pick an Office suite, are you going to pay a couple hundred bucks for client access license to Microsoft, or even $5.95 for Office 365? Or are you going to do Google Docs either for free or for about the same amount of money if you get your business big enough? Or if you really feel you need a fat desktop Office suite, get OpenOffice for free. You know, I just don't see a lot of room there. And Microsoft is also competing against their enormous legacy of Office suite software that's already out there. I mean, I have a lot of Windows machines in my office and lab as well, because I need to know what's happening with that stuff as well as Linux. And for my daily use, whenever I use a Microsoft Office platform, I'm still using Office 2000 free. I never warmed up to the ribbon. I'm not that interested in it. And the important part of this story is I'm far from the only person like that. I know lots of businesses that are still running older versions of Office because they see no reason to buy to anything else. And those are the same people that Microsoft is going to go to, because this seems to be mostly a small, medium-sized business play on their part. And I think these people are going to say, listen, you know, we still have Office 2000 free. It runs fine, or Office 2007, whatever. Why should we pay you all a rental fee for Office software? I just don't see that. I just don't see that flying. So, you know, bottom line, I think the open source Office suites are actually going to do better in the coming years than Microsoft Office is going to be doing, which is going to make Microsoft miserable, because historically they make a lot of money off their Office suite, and that's not going to be the case for much longer.
Fair enough. I'll be excited when that day comes, because I hate having to help people out at it with work. at work.
The day, well, you know, the
she
day
with the
is,
ribbon.
Yep. Well, the day is
which
coming.
Which sucks.
Yep. I really still fail to understand what the virtue of that thing is from a you know, user interface improvement. No. I don't see anything better here. I see more confusion, because I've answered those calls too. I've got this new version of Office, and where did everything go?
I don't think I've ever seen the ribbon. Maybe pictures of it, but I've never used that.
Horrible.
Is it 2007?
Yep.
Yeah, it started in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've been blessed. Yeah, so
you have been.
Yes, you have.
So
I've been using OpenOffice for years and years, and you know, just haven't had to really go and use anything else. It's been great.
Yep, you and a lot of other people.
Until Sunderman sends you a DocX, of course.
No, actually, people send me DocXs all the time, and they open right up
really?
In OpenOffice without an issue. I've never had a problem.
But it depends what you do with the DocX. If you put a lot of fancy Word and Microsoft Office formatting in it, then it mangles the heck out of it. It might open, but it looks really, really bad. At least that's been my opinion.
The only thing that I've ever seen a problem with is that revision history thing.
Yeah, that too.
That's the only thing that I've ever seen as a problem. You know, you open up a document and it's got that revision history crap on it, and you get the strike through lines through half of the text.
Yep, and actually that's where the NoFail utility will help you. And you don't even need to do anything with it. It's just you put it into OpenOffice, and it'll open up the junk. It'll show the revisions properly. Does all the basic Word macros properly. Complex stuff. Yeah, I mean, I would sure the heck hate to send, say, a legal contract that's gone through a couple of edits through it. That I would not want to do. But, you know, short of that kind of level of complex document, you should be fine.
Cool. Well, I use it where possible.
It's actually really good for you know, if you're migrating somebody from an old system and they're using an old version of an Office package to get that stuff converted to a newer format so they can open it up. I had a friend who, as a consulting company, moved a woman from, believe it or not, Windows 95 to Windows, I don't know, whatever it was, Vista or something like that. And she was still using Office 95, and Microsoft, of course, doesn't support those formats anymore. Yep. I told him, use this, it would open it up. It opened everything up. She got all of her business, you know, documents moved across, and everything was fine after that.
Handy, isn't it, having a software program where they don't deliberately try to make everything that you've ever done before obsolete and hose you over to yep. force you to buy the newest version? And I'm looking at you two and to it when I say this.
Cool.
I find it interesting that there seems to be like an overwhelming, you know, consensus that there's a lot of movement towards tablet devices and clouds, and the desktop system is going away, and yet here we are starting to see such an explosion in areas like PC gaming, where you're seeing more and more indie developers and even big-name developers supporting Linux as a gaming platform right from the get-go, and, you know, other technologies like that. And, of course, we still have the whole distribution releases are always going strong year after year. And I'm just wondering how that future is going to hold or what that's going to look like.
You know, from what I can see, now gaming is not an area I cover all that closely, but what I have noticed is that for all that we get really excited about games like World of Warcraft or StarCraft or Guild Wars, my particular favorite, you know, these massively multiplayer role-playing game things, which are all really nifty and neat, and that's the kind of stuff that, or, you know, first-person shooters like Medal of Honor, that kind of thing. That's what we get excited about, and that's, you know, these are games are now that are coming to, or are Steam-powered games. They're coming to Linux or with Wine or crossover Linux, crossover games. You can run them on Linux. I do all the time. The real money, actually, are on these social games that you play on Facebook, and yes, I'm going to say it, Farmville, which, by the way, is not, here's something scary I discovered recently, it's not the number one farm social game. There's actually an even bigger one that's in China and in the Asiatic language. It hasn't even made it to the States yet. It's also you have a farm and so on, and you do your stuff on your farm that actually is much bigger than Farmville, a truly scary thought. And these games, let's face it, graphics? What graphics? I mean, you could run these things on an EGA monitor for that. You know, you really wouldn't lose much. And those games are actually pretty big. What is the name
simple
of that?
Games.
Yeah, they're simple games. They're social
Angry
games.
Birds.
Angry Birds. Sold today to, who was it, EA, I think, bought them? $20
million? Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
It was the developer. It wasn't the game itself. It was the developer, you know, who wrote, the company who started writing it. That company got sold to EA. For like yep. 20 million, yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, there it is. Sure enough. And, again, you know, and that's a mobile game. I think mobile games are actually, if I were a game developer today, chances are I would be writing for either iOS 4 or Android. But I think that actually, come to think about it, hey, that's Linux, isn't it? And that's really where I see games going. I had really thought game consoles would be bigger than they are, and certainly, you know, PS3 and Wii and Xbox are all big, but they seem to sort of been stagnating recently. I can't recall any major hardware upgrades in that area for quite some time now. And so, yeah, I think it's kind of neat that we're getting more of these games, more games, in Linux, but at the same time, I think gaming itself is moving to these really social, easy on the computer games like a Farmville or a Mafia Wars, or games that are really aimed at the mobile platform. And yep, exactly. Well timed.
Actually, I need to correct you a little bit on that. That story there. Joel, it wasn't Rovia that was bought by EA. It wasn't Rovia that was bought by EA, but it was their publisher, Chilingo, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rovia is still independent.
Okay.
But still, I mean, how many millions of downloads on Android for Angry Birds?
Over 2 million
it's
now.
Incredible. I know.
You know, I haven't even seen that game yet.
It's awesome. It's so fun.
Yep, that's right. Yep, EA bought the company, but not the developer. Not yet, anyway. Though if they're smart, they'll offer him tons of money. Considering EA,
yes.
If he's smart, he will not take the money. He'll find somewhere, anywhere else to work. But that's a whole other story. And again, I don't cover that area. Maybe EA has improved salt mine days that I recall from a few years back when last time I paid attention to that area.
I doubt it, but...
Probably not, I'm sorry to say. It's worked out pretty well for them over the years. Not so well for the developers, but pretty well for the company. How very Microsoft of them, come to think of it.
Well, Stephen, we've come to about past the halfway point of our show, and we really want to thank you for taking the time to come out and speak with us.
My pleasure.
We really enjoy having you on the show. We get a lot of good feedback, a lot of people excited when you come on the show. We want to thank you and keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you very much. I certainly will, and... Do you want to give them a teaser for, I don't know, when does this go online?
You're online now, man.
Ah, we're real now.
It's live, actually. But it will be up for download about an hour after we close the show.
Okay, well, in that case, look forward to what I'm talking about next week, because I'm going to the Ubuntu Developers Conference, so I'm going to be reporting straight from there as they talk about what's going to be in the next version of Ubuntu and Unity and so on. And it's be actually the first time in ages that I've been to a major desktop developer conference, and I'm kind of looking forward to what I find there, and I'll be reporting on it as stuff comes up.
Awesome. I look
Alrighty.
Forward to reading your stuff. That's great.
Alrighty then. Well, thank you very much, gents, for having me on the show, and I'll look forward to talking with you sometime soon.
Thank you very much, and have a great night.
You too. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
We are going to take our usual intermission. Intermission.
You got an echo.
Intermission.
Intermission.
Alan, why don't you tell us about the song we're going to play? And I don't know if Bladder Boy's back from his trip to the restroom, but
Bladder Boy.
We have a system administration in a minute from Link coming up right after
that.
Hey,
man, you got to go, right?
Yeah, you know, I hear you. So tell us about this this song, Alan, that we are going to play. And hopefully it won't offend everybody.
Yeah. No, I think we're good on this one. The artist is John Anelio. I went to go see him over the weekend along with Marion Call at a local library of all places. The song is called Cylon Number 6. John Anelio does a lot of sci-fi type songs. And if you give me a moment, I'll actually put his website in the chat room here so everyone can see it. Okay, it'll be popping up there in just a moment as soon as I hit the return button. But go ahead and play it, Dan. It's a good song. I think everyone will like it.
Oh, my God. You ask him to talk, he doesn't shut up.
Sorry.
All right. Here it is, Cylon Number 6.
Powers of seduction. We had to see from Caprica, Battlestar of Africa. She's the source of our destruction. 15,000 survivors racing through the stars. And she is Cyber Number 6. She is always in my game. They think that I'm a lunatic. They don't seem to understand that I'm only human. She is only a machine. They don't seem to realize she's the angel that we need. That we need. She said that she is one of 12. How are we supposed to tell? Cylon or a human, searching for the 13th tribe, seeking nature's life, journey to their solar system. 15,000 survivors racing through the stars. And she is Cylon Number 6. She is always in my game.
To system administration in a minute with your host Link. Today's topic is one that every system administrator should be intimately familiar with. Backups. There are a plethora of really good backup utilities around now and they'll have their pluses and minuses. You have heard names like Commvault, Tivoli, Bacula, Amanda, and many more, but the one we are going to talk about today is one of the earliest and still one of the best, our short for tape archive. This program comes standard on almost any Unix and Linux install I have ever seen, and, as such, is a great utility to keep in mind when looking for a quick and simple backup solution. There are many ways you can script tar and many command line options you can pass it, but in one of its most simple implementations it's just tar space cdf space archive name space file or directory. For example, if I want to backup a slash data directory, I would tar cdf space myarchive.tar space slash data. The C option is for create, the V option is for verbose, the F option is for file. In recent years there was a dash or hyphen before the options that has been recently depreciated. The resulting myarchive.tar file is your archive. This is basically one big file containing all the files in your slash data directory stuck together end to end. One very popular additional command option is Z for zip. This option will compress your file with the gzip compression algorithm, saving you valuable file space. That command would look like tar space czvf space myarchive.tgz space slash data. Extracting from the tar archive is similarly easy. Tar space xvf space myarchive.tar. The X option there instead of a letter C tells to extract instead of create the named archive. Tar is a very powerful and useful utility that every system administrator should be familiar with for its ubiquitousness, even if you generally use something else. And as for backups in general, a lesson hard-learned for a system administrator is, your system is only as good as its backups. Generally speaking, all systems fail at some point and it's a terrible time to find out then that you cannot restore your system and its data. Do your backups regularly and test them often and you will be glad you did, and thanks for listening to System Administration in a Minute with your host.
I love how your name always gets cut off with your host.
It's your player. It plays, the MP3 plays fine on anything else, man.
That's VLC, man. That is VLC. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Hey, I
want to
say,
you're just cutting it off on Pecker.
What?
I want to say one other thing. John Amelio, that's from his album, Sci-Fi Song. If you go to the website, he's got a bunch more stuff on there, MP3s that you can download. And he also does a podcast called the Functional Nerds. So you should check that out as well. And now I'll be quiet for the rest of the show.
Cool.
All right. Good. Because
we got Apple news.
Joel and Pat are chomping at the bit for this one. Oh my goodness. 6 inches, Joel. 6 inches. That's the distance between my pelvis and when your mouth is ready to...
That's what she said.
Ba-dum-bum.
Alright, turn your mic down a little bit. You're, like, really loud.
There.
Alright, go ahead.
Well, what do we want to cover first, Pat? The Steve Jobs stupidity, or...
Yeah, I think we need to let everybody know what Steve Jobs thinks open is.
Yeah. Steve Jobs popped up in Apple's earnings call, and according to him, Windows is open. Among other things.
His weird thing is, though, is his in a statement, it sounded like what he defined open was that it was, you can, he made an analogy to Windows, saying that Windows is more open because it installs on commodity hardware. So Frank, Steve Jobs' definition of open is that you can put it on more hardware than something else. So, which is really a weird definition. I've never heard anybody make that definition before.
My question is, does Steve Jobs believe that, or does Steve Jobs believe that's what the majority of people, that he thinks that's what the majority of people believe? Because I think his exact quotes were, most people
when they think of open, think of Windows.
Yeah.
It's like, what's that thing smoking?
I think it's both, though. I mean, because some people just don't know the difference.
And then again, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. I thought that this is not the first time he has said something similar to that on the lines of equating Windows with openness because of its installation on commodity hardware and its ubiquitous presence on majority of system desktop mm-hmm. systems in the world. That, given that statement, most people would consider Windows open as opposed to Apple, which exists only on Apple's hardware, and Windows exists on everything.
Right.
And then he attacked Google for, like, saying that, you know, they were claiming to be the champions of open and attacking
right.
Apple for not being open, which is, I don't know about you guys, you know, someone says Apple. I don't think Apple's open anything. The only thing
nope.
that's open is your frickin' wallet.
Yeah. Well, considering that today you can go and download the Android open source project and compile it and run it even on an x86, I fail to see how iOS is more open. But
yeah, Andy Rubin, the guy who's the main Android guy, he posted
right.
on Twitter, like his very first post. He said, you know, make directory Android, change directory Android, and then, you know, here's the command to pull it down, compile it.
Yep. And then there's also, they also said that TweetDeck, who developed the Android version of TweetDeck, which is an Adobe Air application, had learned that, I guess he basically misconstrued what TweetDeck said about how many different Android platforms there are, and basically said it made developing for Android a nightmare, which, as we all know, it's not, even with the fragmentation.
Yeah, they got like two guys working on the Android version of this thing. Wow, a big
yep.
deal, you know? It's horrible,
yep.
you know? It's a load of shit is what it is. The guy's freaking...
It's, you know, exactly what it is.
Puffing up his chest and, you know... truth be told, you know, he's worried. You know, he sees the fucking numbers of Android coming up and he's sweating. You know, they got the lawsuit going. You know, Android's arrived, as far as I can tell, you know.
Yep.
You know, you got Oracle suing over Java, you know. You know, but the Dovlek implementation,
yep.
and the virtual machine, and then you got Apple suing HTC, which is an attack against Google via proxy, going against HTC. And isn't Motorola also getting sued too?
I do
yeah.
believe so.
Yeah, everyone's getting fucking sued.
I think,
you know?
Apple's suing Motorola, and I think they're suing Apple right back. And there's a big, you know, snapshot out there with, you know,
sue.
Companies all over the world and lines drawn
yeah.
between them all. And
yeah, someone should clue in whoever's suing Motorola, man. Motorola's been around for fucking forever. They're like one of the pioneers of cell phones, so if
yep.
you think going after them, you're going to freaking hit the jackpot, just keep smoking it.
Yep. But then, of course, was today's announcement that Apple had with Mac OS X 10.7, codenamed Lion, and really Apple's Lion that they are innovating.
So what's the big innovation for this release? Virtual desktop?
An
again?
App Store.
An App Store.
They reinvented Apt with DRM.
Probably.
But isn't that difficult? Isn't that too hard for most people?
What, app stores, or...?
Yeah, like search for something and then, like, click to install it, you know? That's really difficult,
yeah.
you know?
It's
only
hard,
difficult
it?
Until Apple comes out
exactly.
with it. Then it's easy.
Then it's
right.
easy. It's
Man!
Easy.
When
well,
are you going to get it right?
Then, well, and Steve Jobs said that 7-inch tablets are crap, and we all know what that means.
It's
that
a good
means
thing.
They're working on one, and
go
it's
ahead,
crap.
Go on when it comes out.
That's right. It's crap until the Apple 7-inch iPad come
You're
out.
Crackling again.
What's the iPad's dimension right now?
10.
Is it
it's
10
a big-ass screen.
Okay. Big-ass screen.
It's a big frickin' thing.
Just like a big-ass table.
Take that to the crapper and you get tired of holding it.
Yeah.
Because that's real.
Is that really the only thing it's good for?
Pretty much, yeah.
Crapple machine.
That's the use that I can think of. It's a crap top.
I heard it's good for porn.
I thought you couldn't get porn on it. A lot of porn is done in Flash, so what good is that going to do you?
It's got Safari on it. You can get porn.
Yeah, but it's, a lot of the porn sites are in Flash.
Not with HTML5.
What porn site is in HTML5?
Yeah, I was going to say, still most of your sites are in Flash. Not that I would know or anything.
True.
But.
Of course not.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever seen
I've been told.
A porn site in HTML5.
What does it say for HTML5 adoption? I mean, doesn't the porn industry usually lead with new technologies if they're not adopting it? What does that say, if anything?
Nothing.
You're the expert on that, aren't you, Dan?
Really. Yeah, you know, I hate to disappoint you, Dave Yates, but I don't look at porn that much. And it's been a while since I did look at porn. Yeah, you just go ahead, Joel. You go ahead and write.
Spends all his time on
right.
Pen.
Huh?
Nothing.
All right. Keep your lips shut there, pal. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just assumed that most of it was Flash.
Maybe that was back in the day.
Well, let me go take a look. What's a good porn site? Sauce's Pizza,
sure
right?
We should be doing this during the show. If you want to do this in your time, that's your choice, but don't do it during the show, please. Save it, please.
Oh, wow. Anyway, but, I mean, see, what else was in that? Oh, the $1,100 netbook.
Really? An $1,100 netbook?
That's a bargain.
Well, not that much.
What are you talking about? What happened today?
I actually
had to work.
It's $1,000.
It's over to work.
They have an 11. Yeah, really.
Oh, the new MacBook Air. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Sorry to hear you.
An 11-inch
one,
yeah.
Is that a real size, full-size USB port?
Only one.
That's all you need, man.
Just one. Yeah.
Wow.
If Apple says it's the truth, you know.
Well, I thought they didn't need a full-size USB port. I thought the other one, the mini one or whatever it was the bomb.
Oh, it's integrated flash memory.
So I'm playing the piano? Not
everything me. We've learned has come down to this. The next generation of MacBooks.
Sounds like Mac music.
Can we get sued for that?
It's pretty sure. Flaming if you ask me, man.
But
just overall, though, you shouldn't be able to get sued.
Yeah. They got good specs, but man, $999 for an 11-inch one? Ugh.
Yeah, my
well, wait a second.
Here, I'll paste it in there. But the flash is integrated and soldered to the board.
Please.
Oh, I just wanted to go back and see what format that was playing in. Whatever it is playing through the Totem movie player.
It's QuickTime, man. It's the only real codec out there.
Right. It's not WebM.
WebM is freaking awesome. I really like WebM. Want to hear my review on this damn tablet?
Yeah, let's hear the review of the damn tablet.
The damn tablet.
Damn tablet. Damn tablet.
Friggin' tablet. Do you want to hear it, Link? You there? I'm doing it for you, baby.
Joe sending me one.
What? Did he go to the, crapper again?
Sleeping over here, man.
All right. Well, okay. So
the Apple bashers to quit, you know, applying their trade.
I got this tablet. I'm not exactly sure what this is. It didn't actually have, like, much of a brand name on it. All I know, it's an M002. And it's made in China. So it shows up on Friday. And I pop it up, turn it on, and it's a nice device. It's not flimsy. I don't think it's like the one that Alan reviewed. So it's not really flimsy.
Nothing that bad.
Yeah, so it fits in the hand very nicely. It looks nice. I turned it on, and it came up, looked like a standard Android, you know, kind of an older, it's 1.6 is what it was running, and it looked nice. The applications that it came with were usable. The first thing I wanted to do, because since I was going to use this primarily as a ebook reading device, I wanted to get the ebook readers, Aldeco, Amazon, Moonreader, Nook, and I'm not too interested in a Borders one because that one really sucks ass. But anyway, I went to the app. What?
Oh, I just have to concur with the Nook assessment.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I went to the app store. It was the first thing I did to download this thing. And the only thing in there was the Kindle app. I couldn't find any of the other ones. So I guess, like, a lot of these these tablets use a customized or a very pared-down app store, which was disappointing to me. So that just wasn't going to fly. So the first thing I did was I went out, and I started looking about how to flash the firmware on this, whether that was possible. And I did. I went to Slate Droid. I found the Mercury firmware. There's a newer release of the official firmware, and then there was a Mercury firmware. So, and it said it came with Aldeco right out of the box on that firmware. So I was like, hey, you know, I'm just going to give this a shot. Flashing this device, I'll tell you what I had to do, because I didn't have a separate micro SD card, I just had to run out to Radio Shack, the closest place. I got a 4-gig SD card for $14. Put the firmware on there, slapped it in here, and in about 10 minutes, I was running the new firmware, which was not a problem. The new firmware is a little faster than the older firmware, but that's not saying much because this device is very slow. Was the one you used slow, Alan?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, but, I mean, it was livable. It wasn't the fastest thing I've seen, no.
No, let me get it right. It was a little slower than the G1 that I was using for a while. I mean, it's nothing compared to the MyTouch 3G. I mean, that thing is lightning fast compared to this. It's usable. I'm not saying that slowness just turns it off the functionality of it. It doesn't really. But it's still usable. I put the ebook readers on here. I started playing around with it. I gave it to my wife and daughter to play around with over a couple of days. With the Nook, I'm currently reading The Drunkard's Walk, which is a book on randomness in everyday life. It's a really good book. But anyway, what I had to do was I had to turn off the flashiness of the Nook reader, like the actual page turning animations and stuff. I had to get rid of all that. Just pared down to the basics. Otherwise, it was just taking way too long for my desire. The touch screen on this is not as... what's the word I'm looking for? It's not a capacitive touch screen. Right, it's not as responsive as I'd like it to be. I actually have to push on here pretty hard and make very dramatic movements sometimes to get it to recognize the fact that I'm turning a page. I've tried using a stylus on here, and sometimes using a stylus makes it a little better. I would also say probably the other biggest downfall on this is that physical button-wise, it only has one menu button on here. I know some of these other devices have, like, maybe two other buttons. So it only has a menu button, and that menu button essentially wakes it up if it goes to sleep, turns it on, or powers it off. That's essentially what you're doing with the menu button. A lot of the functionality that you want to use this for to go back and for navigation, you have one single like back button in the upper top right next to a menu button. So every functional button that you'd want to use is in like the dock at the top of it, which it can be a little bit of a pain in the butt. Battery life on this thing is fairly good. It lasts a couple hours. Now, my daughter Avery has really loved the crap out of this for playing a game which our entire family has enjoyed very much called Alchemy. Not to be confused with Alchemy Classic, but Alchemy. It's a really fun game where you start off with four elements, earth, air, water, fire, and you pair these elements together and you make different things. Like you pair earth and water together, you get swamp, and then fire and air together, you get energy. You combine those together, you get life, and then you take life, you know, and then you get like
you get earth,
air,
and fire, and you get the band.
No, I don't think you do get the band. You know what? I'm going to try that. That's a good one. But there's like 300 different combinations that you can make, and you get cool things. Like, eventually down the line, you can make like McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Santa Claus and stuff. But it's a really fun game. It's pretty addicting. We're all playing it. My daughter loves to play with it on here. I gave it to my wife to do some web browsing. And see, here's the thing about these, and this is why I can see a lot of complaints with the iPad, too, is, I mean, I know the newer versions of Android 2.2, I think it is, has default, like, flash compatibility.
Mm-hmm.
This one obviously does not have flash compatibility. So a lot of the websites, like my wife would like to go to, might have some flash content and stuff. She can't see it. Because it doesn't have flash on here. So it limits the functionality for that. She was on her Facebook and doing some standard stuff, but as it is right now, this device is not ideal for my wife switching from using my Sylvania netbook, which she does on a regular basis, to using strictly a device like this. But as an e-reading device, it does. I really do enjoy it. I like the bigger screen. I like, you know, having more text on the page, and, you know, we're talking like 3 to 4 more times text on the page. And was, what did you think of this, honey?
It's slow.
The wife says it's slow.
It's slow. I heard that, yeah.
What about the comic book reader, Dan?
You know what? I didn't try that yet, Dave Yates, and I would be interested in doing that. I didn't even think to try that yet. The screen itself is 7 inches. The screen is 7 inches. The device is a little bigger than 7 inches. Now, what I will say, Neuros is selling this as a control device. It's their primary goal for this.
Yeah.
For this, and I do think that this would be an ideal control device.
A remote control for their Neuros devices.
Yeah, I think this would be a good device. I've used the Myth. Remote on here. I have it on here. It works really well. The only thing I think would hinder that as a remote control device is the screen, the
right,
you know, how responsive the screen is, which can be a little bit of a problem. I've toyed around with the idea of trying out the official updated firmware, but I'm not yet ready to move off of this, especially since my daughter has her save games. But I like it. I would have not tried PDF reading, because I know a lot of e-books are in PDF format, too. And I'm going to check that out. But
just buy a Nook.
I thought about that, too. So, I mean, for $99, it works out pretty well. I'm going to be really interested to see how these devices progress and evolve, because I truly think for the standard user coming at this device, approaching it, and even I would suspect the one from Kmart, I do think they're a little on the pokey side, a little too slow compared to, like, a phone. But then again, you know, you're talking about something that's a third of the price of most of the smartphones out there today, you know, the decent ones. I like it. Yeah. I think it's fairly decent. It's something fun to play around with. It's, the wife thinks it's slow. My daughter enjoys it. I enjoy it. I use it for reading every night. I give it a thumbs up for that, and I look forward to the future of these devices.
Let me ask you this, Dan. Does it have a regular USB port on it as well?
Oh, no. I should have addressed that. It does not have a regular USB port on it. It has almost... You know what? Actually, I'm going to double-check this right now.
Is it USB to go? Mini B, maybe?
No. It is not. It is... how do I describe this? I don't want to damage this port, but
it's
an iPod-esque
kind of connector.
No,
it's
kind of, it's just like, it's almost like the fuses connector.
Yeah, pretty close. So, you know, I have one of my friends at work ordered this too, and I was able to cursorily look at it today,
right.
And, you know, just to look at the aesthetics on the outside, because he got it and played with it a few days and bricked it somehow. I don't even know how. He says he just shut it off one time and it didn't turn back on. So he's got an RMA. And he's going to get another one. But he did mention that he really liked it.
Huh. And then one thing I don't get on these 7-inch tablets is the fact they're using micro USB instead of... Or micro SD, I'm sorry, instead of regular full-size SD. I don't get
you. You know, what I really want to know, the question that is burning deep inside me is... a question probably more appropriate for someone who has something like this and also has an actual ebook reader, and that is, I want to know, what is a better purchase right now? Is it a better purchase right now, some sort of a 7-inch Android tablet, or getting a Nook or a Kindle, given that the Nook and the Kindle now can even do some, you know, some silly little games or something like that as well. Are you getting that much more functionality out of the Nook or the Kindle as far as the ebook reading goes to sort of offset the fact that you don't have access to all those other apps that you might on a slower Android 7-inch Android device sort of deal?
I'll give my opinion when you're done.
Well, no, as I say, just to answer this question, I have a Nook on, and reading books and stuff, I do enjoy that. It does have a very basic web browser, which is, you know, you'll mind seeing
right.
things in black and white. It's not a problem. As for games, I think they have a Soku or whatever, you know, that numbers game, and they I think chess is on there.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of ways of games and stuff on there. But
I think it just depends on where you want to read. If you want to read in the sun, then you want to get like a Kindle or a Nook. If you want to read, if you don't read in the sun, if you're always reading inside or in the dark, then you're going to want one of these 7-inch tablets or an iPad or something like that. That kind of makes sense.
Here's my opinion, and I'm going to go straight
yeah.
to the heart of it, Joel. Straight to the
there
heart of it, Alan. This is because I don't have a Nook. I've seen a Nook. I've seen a Kindle. I played around with them. I've read some reviews on the stuff, and this is what it's come down to me. And I'm still kind of on the fence about this and trying to struggle as to what I want. When I look at the Nook or the Kindle, the one thing that bothers me the most about those two devices is not so much as they could be more like a one-trick pony there. I mean, it's going to be primarily, it's an e-book reader. They use it for reading e-books. The thing that bothers me the most about them is if I go with the Nook, I'm tied to a Barnes & Noble store. If I go with the Kindle, I'm tied to Amazon store. If I go with this device right here, I'm not tied to any of their stores. Granted, now if I go buy a book from the Nook store, from Barnes & Noble, I can only read it on the Nook unless I find a way to break the DRM on it. Same thing with the Kindle. But on the flip side of that, the one I like the best is Aldico. If I want to pull down books, you know, off of FeedBooks or Project Gutenberg, I can do that through Aldico or Moonreader very easily. And I'm not tied to, you know, having to go through some funky stuff to get these things.
But now, isn't that the same as on the Kindle and the Nook? You can, you know, use those open format books as well, right? Can't you do EPUB?
Yes, you can do
EPUB and stuff.
I'm pretty sure you can. You can just drop those on there and read those on either one of
those. Does the Kindle support EPUB now? Because I thought when it first came out...
The Kindle doesn't, but the Nook does.
Right, the Kindle doesn't support EPUB, which would be like the killer for me.
Yeah, but it supports Mobi.
What?
Yeah, it supports Mobi. MOBI is what the Kindle supports. That's the more open format. So if you have something in EPUB, you can use Calibre and convert it. That's it.
Or I could use this tablet and just pull it right down from FeedBooks.
Well, yeah.
And read it right there. See, again,
it doesn't really matter.
what matters to me is I like these services. I enjoy reading books on these devices. I just don't like being tied to a specific application with using a specific service. When, I like the Nook's application, Android application, the best out of the three.
So now here's the killer question then.
Huh.
This is probably a good question for Manfry, if he's still listening.
I'm here.
Did you have an iPad? Was it
no.
Chad that has an iPad?
Chad has
Chad.
An iPad.
And he's probably not on, right?
No.
Nope.
So, alright, so here's the big question. Like, why not, if that's the issue, why not go to something like an iPad, which has access to all of that?
Well,
because an iPad's like $400.
Well, I know
Android
that.
Does too.
500.
500.
Yeah.
$500.
The Android has
I know
no
that, and that's that's when I'm really the kind of experience that I think I'm really looking for is an iPad type experience, and I've been holding off for a very long time, waiting for some manufacturer to pull their head completely out of their ass and stick Android on a 10-inch tablet with more than a 2 megahertz CPU, you know, so that it's actually a usable device, something that I can do, that I can get the ebook stuff on there and a couple of games and run a web browser halfway decent that you don't have to wait 45 minutes for a page to load. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, and it's not happening. So my second choice in line is probably to get an ebook reader so that I have access to the books that I really want to have access to, to that sort of media when and where I want to have access to. It's much more convenient for me to look through technical books and things like that on a half-inch thick device that I can stuff in my bag as opposed to, carrying around 75 pounds worth of technical manuals. But so that's kind of my second choice, but I would much rather have something more full-featured. It's just not happening, I guess, with the Android stuff so far.
I think you'll start on that by the end of the year, though, Link.
Stuff on the yeah, well, I know, I keep waiting, and I keep looking at these, my RSS feeds, the news stories, that especially today, they're talking all about these new Android tablets that Verizon is supposed to release.
The Galaxy Tab, November 11th, which is going to be on every single carrier.
Yeah.
Right.
November 11th, they're supposed to have them without a contract, by the way. They're supposed to have them ready.
$600.
However,
$600.
You know, as cool as these things might be, right? They're up at the iPad the level at price level.
Should be half
of probably
that,
less functionality because let's face it, every Android tablet that has come out so far has been an abysmal failure because they don't.
This one's supposed to be nice.
They're waiting. The manufacturers are waiting for Gingerbread to come out. The specs have been increased tremendously. Yeah. The interface is going to be redone, you know, pretty well. And there's going to be a lot of changes that are going to be coming with the Gingerbread release. The SDK is going to drop either, if it already hasn't, it's this week or next week or something like that. And so you'll be able to start programming for that, you know, relatively soon. And they're waiting for these better spec devices to come out before they start pushing these things out.
Right, but like, how long do you wait? You know what I mean? How long do you wait before you just pull the damn, you know, you just pull it and go buy something and use whatever the hell you get? As opposed to me just sitting here waiting forever and ever. And I guess that's the big question. Should I keep waiting?
Get yourself a Kindle right now for $139, Wi-Fi only. And that should do everything. I mean, I have one of those Kindles, and they're awesome. They work really, really well. Mm-hmm. And the new ones are even, you know, they're a bit, you know, smaller in your hand. They're lighter. I mean, all that kind of stuff. You know, they work really, really well to lug around those 75 pounds of tech manuals that you're looking for. Plus, you can mark them up, bookmark them, put notes in there, do all that kind of stuff. Now, you're not going to have a full-blown web browser or any of that kind of stuff, and for the time being, until these tablets get to be where they need to be, that's probably the way to go.
Right.
So you think I should just pull the trigger and get a real e-book reader?
Does the Kindle do PDF?
Yep, yes. Kindle does PDFs.
All right. You know what? The thing is, if you get the Kindle or the Nook and you start buying books from them later on, you get a tablet with the Android or the Nook app, you can sync your books with those anyhow.
Yeah,
and
right.
So you can bring your books over from that device. I mean, that's right. Another thing that I'm considering, too.
And you're not limited, either. You know, I buy books from the pragmaticprogrammers.com. I buy them from, you know, O'Reilly, and those are all in open formats that you can put onto those devices.
Right.
I would probably say don't buy an O'Reilly book on Amazon because then it's probably locked in DRM some way so that you can't move it around if need be.
Locked into to Amazon at that point.
Right.
Now you don't buy O'Reilly anyway. You go and you buy a good e-book from Prentice Hall, Pearson Education.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Yeah. They have the better ones anyway. Absolutely.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, they have, you know, they all are offering the open formats in the format for your device. So if they usually have an EPUB, they usually have a MOBI, they usually have a PDF. So this way you can put it on any device that you want to. Throw it on your desktop, throw it on your phone, throw it on your tablet, or e-book reader, whatever you happen to have.
Yep. I got to play with the new one over at Target. Had a demo unit, and I'm really impressed with how small it is compared to my Kindle 2. I would, however, spend the extra $50 and go with the 3G version.
No, you don't need that.
Why do you need the 3G on those?
Well, basically, you can...
Yeah, I mean, unless you're like that hooked on buying books all the time.
Well, no, there's other uses for it. Like, for example, if you have to... I mean, yeah, the web browser kind of sucks. Although the Kindle 3 has a WebKit-based web browser, so it's a little bit better. But if you want to actually look something up really quick, like, I'm thinking for Link, like, a train schedule or something like that. You know what I mean? And
he's got his phone to do that.
You could do that.
while he's standing right there.
Yeah.
It's a little easier to pull out the phone than it is to pull out the Kindle.
Well, yeah, but
plus,
my train
schedule is static, and it's I can download it as a PDF, so.
Right. But, I mean, either way, you know, but, I mean, it just depends. I really like having 3G. Mine has 3G only. I like having it there. If I want to buy a book or something, or if I'm in the bookstore, you know, like, say, a bookstore that doesn't have Wi-Fi, like Barnes & Noble, you know, when I actually look on my Kindle and find out how much it costs on the Kindle store, then I can. You know,
wait, your Barnes & Noble don't have Wi-Fi in them out there?
No, they do. That's my thing is, what if you're not at a Barnes & Noble? You're at someplace else, like a Borders or Walmart, for that matter, you know? It doesn't really matter. Wherever.
Well, if you're that in need, I'm pretty sure you can run into a Wi-Fi hotspot somewhere along the line.
I know. Well, Wi-Fi hotspots just aren't as plethora. Open ones are not as popular around here. Plus, what are the odds you're going to actually be able to, if you find one that's open, like...
There's a Starbucks on every other block in this damn country, and you will have a Wi-Fi hotspot anywhere you go.
Well, how would the Kindle browser be able to negotiate? You see what I'm saying? With that front-end web page, you know, so that you can actually get signed in and all that jazz.
All right, so another quick question. Providing that I were to go the route of buying an actual ebook reader to read ebooks, Kindle or Nook?
Kindle. That helped. I like the Kindle. I think you'd have to look in each bookstore. Look in the Barnes & Noble one, look in the Amazon one. See which ones have the books that you care about, and then buy that one.
I don't think that matters because I can convert the books from whatever format that I want to any other format that I want.
Right.
Hey guys, I gotta get going, so it's getting late
for
me.
Yeah, it's anyway.
Is there a big difference?
Thanks for listening.
Is there a big difference in the offerings? The book offerings?
No, not really. That's what I really want to. No, I don't think there is really.
Well, look at pricing.
You know, that brings to mind like why pick one over the other? Does one have a better interface? Is one faster feeling than the other? Is one more intuitive to use? You know, the Nook has the little on-screen giblets going on there, and the Kindle has the nice little chiclet keyboard thingy going on, a little bubble keyboard or whatever. I would like to hear some opinions. So, you know, if you guys have an opinion on the subject or you've had a chance to use either one or both, you know, shoot me an email or something. Or let me know what you think and why. I would be interested to know. My big thing is, you know... actually, at this point, I think you can buy a Kindle at Target. Like, you can just walk in and buy it. I'm an instant gratification kind of guy. And when I decide to pull the trigger on this and get something, I want to just go get it. I do have a Target locally, so I could probably just go buy a Kindle there. And I also have, practically right across the street, a Best Buy, which, of course, sells the Nook. So... even that, you know, neither one of those is a barrier to me anymore. It used to be, I you know, the Nook was the only one I could get cash in hand and be using at the same hour. But I believe you can get the Kindle from Target now as well. So I really am undecided and sort of on the hook as to what to do. Anyway, that's enough for me.
All right.
Yep.
Give it to Linky.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a tough choice. The only thing that holds me back from buying a Kindle or a Nook is their price still. I mean, it's just at above that, like, if it was under $100, it would be a no-brainer. But it's like right up there. It's like I could buy a Nook or I could buy a PlayStation 3 with another couple of dollars.
Right. I think you're going to see them. You're going to see them get down to about a $99 price point before long.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long is that before long? But.
Well, I was going to say there's also the Kobo reader.
Well, what the hell good is that?
It reads EPUB.
Yeah, but where can you buy books from? Kobo Books?
Borders. Yeah,
how much is the Kobo?
$99, I thought. Let me look.
Yeah, but my concern about the Kobo reader is it if it's anything like the Borders application, that's a piece of crap.
Yeah. See, that's
what
the
is
thing.
Yeah. Is a Kobo reader in the Android marketplace?
No. I take
you
it
have
back.
To go
it's
to
$139.
Well, screw that.
Yeah. But
well,
it
how
does
do
have
you
wireless.
Because I'm looking at it right here, smartphones. Let's see, what does it say? Android. You down? Well, you know what? I'm gonna check out the Kobo app on my Android, and I'll see how well that goes. Why don't I ever remember seeing that before?
I don't know.
I'm gonna search for that right now.
So, how many Android owners are thinking about getting a separate device to read ebooks on? I mean,
I already have a separate device.
Well,
I'd rather
yeah,
have just one. I'd rather have just one.
Me too. But there are pluses and minuses to all of that.
Yeah, I mean, but how many screens are you going to own? Yeah, are you going to consume media on what's the? I mean, for Gorkon, it's probably as many as he can get. But I mean,
of course.
Lately, I've been doing everything on the Droid X. You know, I mean, it's got a 4.3-inch screen on it, and for reading a book, you know, where if I'm out whatever random places, you know, I mean, it just seems to work fine.
Hey, Dave, it's a tough call. I mean, really, I should be just content with reading them on the phone, but.
I don't own it yet, but I read a lot of books on an old Palm 3X or whatever
yeah.
it's called. And I could easily see me living with just an Android phone and reading books on that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I might be far in the minority on this one, but after having tried it on the Android, and it works on the Android just fine, and I sort of like the swipe thing, but what I find is that I get annoyed very quickly at having to read anything lengthy one paragraph at a time.
Right.
Yeah.
You read three sentences and you got to swipe the freaking thing, and then you read three more sentences and you got to swipe right. the thing, and you read three more sentences and you have to swipe the thing. And
right.
to be honest, I really dig the old world feel of actually having a book in my hands, and I'm thinking
yeah.
that you know, getting an actual EPUB or an e-reader that sort of has that feel to it and the same sort of size would take care of both of those things for me. You know, I would have the book in
there.
My hand and be able to read a whole page at a time without swiping.
Yeah. I can see your point there. I personally can't see me. I can see me owning a Droid phone and a laptop and maybe an e-book reader.
An MP3 player. Yeah.
Probably. But I can't see throwing a tablet in there with it. I mean, I
well,
need the laptop
why,
or a physical keyboard.
That's why I was trying to figure out, you know, whether or not I really should hold out for a tablet. And go for a tablet to replace not only just the books, but also a netbook, too. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
I guess it depends on how many devices you're really trying to compact. With an ebook reader, I still don't feel too bad getting an ebook reader and using that as a replacement for carrying, you know, a bunch of regular books with me that saves me space and time and things like that. I don't know about compacting everything I do into one device, though. I'm not sure that that's going to be possible. However, yeah. My smartphone does tend to do a lot of that for me. You know, I can watch movies on it that I really like, and I can read stuff on it if I have to. And, you know, it does a plethora of other interesting things for my media player and things like that. That's really cool, but I don't know if I want to throw everything into that one pot.
There's also yeah,
and the tablets just don't appeal to me other than just as a straight ebook reader, personally. The lack of a physical keyboard versus the size of a netbook or a laptop makes the laptop more appealing to me. But if I was going to read a lot, an ebook reader would be appealing.
Huh. Oh well. Things that make you go, hmm. Anyway, Dan, we gotta get going, man. It's getting late.
Yes, we do. Yep. Okay. Well then. Alright. Well, that's it. Next week, do we have any guests next week?
What schedule say?
It says Colin Guthrie is also suspending.
Well, we shall see then. All right, everybody. Hopefully, we will.
Yeah.
I'm going to play us out with this, one of the highly anticipated and most requested songs ever on this show, because it's been demanded by many people. I will give you some Doba.
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah. So, enjoy. This is for you, Claudio. Have a happy.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Tumblr.
Never disappoints.
No, it doesn't.
Can we talk about the new search of computers?
Can we talk about multiprocessing?
Can we talk about Beowulf clusters?
Can we talk about Web 2.0?
Just stop geeking me.
Just stop geeking me.
Hey, it's Steve Geek. Please come check out my podcast for my take on all things geeky. You can find us at www.talkgeektome.us. That's www.talkgeektome.us. Thank you.
Just talk geek to me.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
It's over. Daddy has a gun.
It's over.
Sweet.
All right. Damn. Got late.
Alchemy.
No, damn, not classic. Don't get classic.
Why?
Keep look. There's. Because Alchemy, there's one that's down there in the shop. It's a little further down, just called Alchemy. It's got 300 elements, and it's a lot easier to use, and I think a more enjoyable game than Classic.
Look.
It's just called Alchemy.
If I can see it on my Verizon store...
Yeah, it should be there. Wait, does Verizon have its own store that's not, like,
they do,
easily
they don't,
searchable?
All right. I typed in Alchemy. The only one I saw was the one that... the classic one. That was the very first one. Who's it published by? Do you know?
Hold on one second. Let me... Damn it, come on.
Classic one's not bad.
Hold on. Let me see about... I feel like a noob. Alchemy is published by... Andre Zed Zalkin is the guy's name. Like I said, it's just called Alchemy.
See, if they play search, games with the store.
If you search for it, Alchemy, in both of the stores that I've looked through, the one on my phone and the one on the tablet, you have to keep scrolling down. It's like a page and a half down. It's just called Alchemy, Andre Zed Zalkin. Not classic. Classic, I played a little bit of Classic, but I'm telling you, the one that he does is, I prefer it.
Nope. Android Store.
Tom, we got a new provider.
Trust we're not going to piss off the clergy this time.
I don't know, man. I didn't listen to it, but I'm trusting you today, Alan. Trusting you.
It's a very nice song, I think.
Can you turn yourself up a little, Alan?
Yes, I can. Hello, hello. How about this? Better?
Yeah, that's better. How you doing, Pat?
Good. How you doing, man?
Hey, all right. How you doing, Dan? Man?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
Hey, doing Dan. All right.
Hey, Pat.
Where's Link today?
I haven't heard him yet.
Do we have a guest tonight?
I thought Stephen Vaughn Nichols was on the calendar.
Yeah, but I don't know if he is. I haven't heard anything. I'm guessing he is, but...
Well, if he shows up, great. If not, we'll carry on.
Who's that?
Stephen Vaughn Nichols here.
Oh, hey, we were just asking whether you're going to be on. It's awesome to hear from you, Steve.
Hey there, how goes it?
It goes well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right.
Excellent.
How are you coming in, Stephen? Are you coming in through the phone or through SIP?
Straight phone this time around.
Sounds pretty good.
I'm getting a lot of hiss on my end, but if you're not, that's fine.
That would just be Dan.
Yeah, that happened when you came on, Dan.
What happened?
It's kind of hissy in the background.
Yeah, mute yourself for a second, Dan.
Yep.
Ah, perfect.
What's happening, Boober Boy?
Oh, my goodness. Turn yourself down. You're killing us.
Turn myself down?
No, I think he sounds good.
All right.
All right.
Hmm?
It's all right?
Wait. Talk again.
Testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2.
All right, that's
two,
good. That's good.
It sounds fine.
That's good.
So who do we have on? Did Steven make it on?
He's on right
I'm
now,
here.
Sir.
Oh, awesome. That's what I like to hear. I was afraid Dan scared you off again, Steven.
No worries. I'm here.
I got
so Dan,
4 minutes.
Did you like... You got old new passwords up the wazoo?
Yep.
Yeah, we had a little bit of an issue. Somebody got into our answers box and started making calls to, like, certain African countries that are, like, on the red alert list. And we got an email from the VoIP provider saying calls were made to, like, Somalia. They disabled the foreign calling.
I saw that. I laughed when I got that email.
At first I thought it was bullshit, but I actually went to the logs and sure enough, yeah, I saw the calls.
How y'all doing?
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
How are you, Dave,
hey,
my Somali brother?
Link?
Hey, Dave.
We're great. Hey, the other Dan?
Yep.
How you doing?
All right.
So why is he the other Dan, and why is Dan Washko the other, not the other Dan?
The other Dan's got more N's in his name.
That's true.
Well, I guess that's the... I don't know. Never mind. I caught them both the other day and just now.
So, Dave, how you getting in now?
What's that?
How you connecting now?
Cell phone.
Oh, okay.
You got to buy you a microphone.
Yeah. We need to get you an Android phone, man.
Yeah, I know it.
You're bringing us down, Dave. I'm the only one who doesn't have one.
I know.
It's not right, man.
I will try next week to, I've got a switch in here. I'll try next week to set up something wired, because I think that's my only problem. I've had a lot of lag and stuff wirelessly, but I think if I use the Kiga or Twinkle on that switch, it might be okay.
You know what it is, Dave? You threatened to pull Lynn off your podcast, and it's like some kind of negative karma.
I don't know. Nobody's had anything good to say about that suggestion. I don't think it's going to happen.
Have you heard Susan from Loquendo?
No.
She sounds so much better than Lynn. 100 times.
Oh, really?
It sounds so much more real.
Are they using that commercial app?
Able to use it, right?
It's a commercial app, and what it is, it's like a replacement for the stock Android of voice synthesis. And once you buy that, any application that uses voice synthesis will use the replacement. And for instance, the GPS turn by turn.
Whoever's trying to get in is not
making it. Man, a rotary phone?
No, I think that's what happens when you have a really slow connection. You try to connect with VoIP.
It's Joel.
Probably.
Gotta be.
Yeah, no, but it sounds really good. Let me bring it up. Feed it right into the mixer. Hold on.
They use it on Android Buffet.
Yeah, yeah. Let me get a cable. I'll hook it into the mixer so you can hear it.
You know, I always liked Lynn, but you know, like she had a little. Not quite as chattery as she used to be.
Yeah. She's nothing but a time-saving mechanism for me, that's all.
She picked up a...
Hey, you know, that's what I've been doing. That's what I've been doing on my system administration in a minute stuff, Dave. I do not have time to actually sit down and record stuff. It's much easier for me to type it. You know, when I have a few minutes here and there, and just have voice synthesis take care of it, you know.
Yeah, it's a whole lot easier.
Plus, you know, nobody wants to listen to me anyway, so I figure if I did it a different way, maybe they would listen. I'm not as charismatic as the. Venerable Dave Sexy Yates.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I sound like a hillbilly. You sound like a DJ.
Speaking of that, Dan, are you paying attention? Dan Wash, Dan? Paging Dan Washko?
I don't think he's in our room.
Did you get my number two system administration in a minute?
Guess what? You can make it sound even better.
Whoa!
With a little situation, certain phrases become more expressive. That's impossible.
Pat's new girlfriend.
Or rather, that's impossible. You're kidding. Or you're kidding. Well then, what would you like me to say? I'm all ears.
I see we get on my nerves.
Holy mackerel.
Oh, you're not making it.
Joel will call in from the mothership.
Yeah. But doesn't that sound so much better than Lynn?
Yeah, it does. It does. I'm not a big fan of the inflection. She's a little too enthusiastic for me.
Listen up. My voice already sounds pretty fantastic, right?
Right?
Guess what?
What's that
you
one called?
You can make it sound even better.
I'd like to get that just to read my emails to me.
You can do that.
It'd make all the junk mail sound fun.
Yeah, let me type something in.
Have it read your porno spam to you?
Damn right. Well, you can put the web, you can just type stuff into that?
Yeah, it's a demo. You can do that, and I'll just read it off.
Oh, put the address over on me.
Alan.
There you go.
Alan is so sexy.
We need to keep that one.
I love it.
So what's the story, guys? What's we up to tonight?
We're just about ready to start.
Link is so hot.
Game straight.
All right, let's get it on. So that's Susan from Loquendo.
She got good taste.
Website up for that. Yeah.
I put it in IRC.
All right. Cool. So, is anybody talking to Joel?
I don't see him in IRC.
I don't want him killing us again.
Nope, no IRC.
Okay. Let me just make sure I got all the audio levels right for the music. I don't want to blast anybody out. And All right.
All right.
That's way too loud.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad, was it?
Wow.
This is why. All right. And here we go. This should be a lot quieter.
Rather distorted.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. Hold on, let me quit that. Hillbilly theme. Play. Yeah, it is distorted. Honest to goodness. I might have to pull that in after the fact.
Or you can just sing it.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be distorted like that. It was never distorted like that before. I think I know what the problem is. Allow ULAW, ALAW speaks. Alright, this should fix it. And then we're good to go. Alright.
Not quite.
All right, you know what? I think I'll just have to add it in after the fact. I don't want to waste too much time doing this. And hopefully I can add the audio in. I don't know what's going on with that. For some reason, it's just not liking it. It's just not liking it. ULAW GSM speaks. It sounds like a codec issue.
You're going to have the same thing happen to the audio shorts, though, too.
Yeah, that's why I want to fix it, but... Alright, here we go. Damn it.
Get it?
It's a little big show. There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
It was a codec issue. All right.
Should he use Fuji next time?
Is anybody heard from Joel?
I believe that was the crackling we heard, but I don't know.
All right. Well, here we go. I'm going to start us off. And we'll get right into it with Mr. Stephen J. Von Nichols. We're going to play our show intro, Steve.
All right.
And it'll be about less than a minute, and then we'll get right into it. We'll introduce you, say hello, and get right into it. Sorry for the delay there. All right. Now.
Hey, guys.
Oh, about
hey.
Time.
Yeah,
let me make sure.
If you don't like the cats, you can get up your way.
Not that, can you guys hear that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got him.
But the show is going back to DLFGN.org.
Dot org. Good?
I see challenges.
All right.
Funny.
For me.
Okay, here we go. It would help if I was on it.